One of the parts of hosting a nationally distributed, say hello and get to know the fine folks who watch and consume your program. Well, during the pandemic, it's been limited to Zoom calls. And that's what we're doing this week, as we have a conversation with a family from Wisconsin. Several generations have been on the farm, and it's now called Shamrock Farm. And it's got a great story in the sense of it's similar to everybody else's, you know, dad farmed, grandpa farmed, grandson's in there. But this one goes back away. We're going to talk with the Farrell, three of the members of the Farrell family. We're going to talk with Mark and Bobby. And Mark's father, Robert, is 92, started farming in 1951. Things have changed a little bit. This spring, he had an opportunity to hop into the cab with his grandson, Bobby, and they planted some corn. The thing is, you know it if you're in the middle of doing all sorts of planting with the GPS. Well, imagine farming in 1951. This whole GPS thing is mind-blowing, and this is something that families need to do. There's a reason that they did take this ride. We're going to get to that, and we hope you enjoy this. And if you do have stories like this or conversations you think we should have, email me, markettomarket@iowapbs.org. I'm Paul Yeager, and you can also reach me at paul.yeager, that's Y-E-A-G-E-R, @iowapbs.org. We hope we can tell your story and enjoy this one on this edition of the M2M podcast. Three generations of the Farrells are with us, Mark, Robert, and Bobby. So let's start with Bobby. You're the one who kind of, the young guy has to go first. You got to explain. Are you the one doing all the technical work right now, explaining everything?
Yeah, I got this all set up, and Grandpa came out and ran the tractor, and he was really excited. And so I messaged you guys on Facebook, and then you got back to us and set everything up.
So, Robert, I assumed you were the technology guy. Are you the one who always likes all the technology?
I don't know anything about it.
Isn't it amazing to sit here? You're talking to a phone or a tablet, and I'm sitting hundreds of miles away, and it's like we're in the next room.
It didn't seem possible 30 years ago.
I bet not. We're going to get into that a little bit. And your son, Mark, is on your side or on your right side. Mark, tell us a little about where you're at right now. Where are we physically sitting right now?
Okay, we're at my parents' house that they built off the home farm that's been, my dad's the fifth generation, or fourth generation, we're the fifth. 1866, our ancestors came over from Ireland and settled this 100-acre parcel, and it's been in the family since then. And my brother Sean and I started a partnership with Dad in 1981. And we bought Dad out in 1990 and bought some neighbors' farms, have been growing since then.
So, Mark, you grew up in that area. How far? So you grew up in this house, or is this one that was built after you were in that era?
Okay, so the home farm where I grew up is about a quarter mile away. And my brother John actually lives on the home farm. And right out of high school, I bought the neighbor's farm in 1978 and started a partnership with Dad. And then when my brother graduated high school in 1981, that's when we needed a farm name, and we started Shamrock Farm. And then in 1990, Shamrock Farms bought out my dad's portion of Shamrock Farm.
So now, wait a minute. You said your brother lives on the home place. I thought the older one was supposed to get the home place. How did you lose a coin flip, or what happened?
I bought the neighbor's farm and moved there. And then when Sean assumed ownership, he just got married before me. So he just went back to the home farm. And the house we're in right now is the house my parents built in 1983 when Sean got married.
Okay, so you're fairly all close and not very far. So then, Bobby, yeah. Where are you living right now? Are you within a half mile in another direction?
I live with my dad, yet, Mark, on the farm he bought in high school.
Okay.
I do like your suggestion.
What's that?
I do like your suggestion, though.
Anytime. Great. It's always good that the outsider comes in and rips up family strife like that. I like that.
Yeah.
Why did you pick Shamrock Farms as a name?
Well, we have Irish ancestors. But honestly, my dad's brother owned a liquor store in Middleton, Wisconsin, not far away, and it was Shamrock Liquor. And when we needed a name, we thought, well, we'll carry that on and become Shamrock Farm.
So, Robert, when you settled, where did you build? I mean, I know you're in a different spot since the 80s, but when you started, say you were Mark or Bobby's age, where were you at? Where was your home place?
I was at home with my parents. And I never moved off of it until 1983 when I built this. I got married in 1951.
In 51. So then do you have brothers that you were farming with?
No, that was just my dad and I. All we had was 100 acres.
In 1951 when you got
right.
When you started?
When I got married, yeah.
What was farming like in 1951?
Well, there's nothing like it was today. I had hogs and cattle and chickens and that was about it. But the almost 24 hours a day work. That's what I'm on. I had a lot of I had as high as 30 cows one time that I had to take care of. Many nights I spent in the barn until 9:30.
That's just because. Keep going.
We only had 9 children, so I didn't have much time to do anything else.
Well, since it's a family show, I could say you found time to do a couple of things. But, you know, so no dairy, though, right? I didn't hear the word dairy in there.
Yeah, we had dairy. Dairy, hogs, and chicken. I had a few chickens the first couple of years, but they were too profitable, so I got rid of them.
Why stick with the things that make you money? Why not make you work harder? When you think about 51, you know, just go in increments of 10, 51 to 61 to 71. What's the big change in those 20 years?
Well,
the tractors
for one thing. In 1961, I bought 2 3020 tractors. They cost me $5,000 a piece. And from then on, it's been John Deere until they broke down and bought a New Holland here a couple of years ago. So when I drove that, I pulled a bag over my head so nobody would see me.
They just don't take you to. They just don't make you run to go get parts for them. Is that right?
That's about right.
You wouldn't make the parts. Oh, it doesn't break down? Is that
No, I said we can't tell him when it does because he gives us a hard time for it.
So the biggest, you know, the changes. So at what point did you expand from 100 acres? Was it in that 51 to 71 era as you had more equipment?
I rented land, probably 150 acres that I rented from a neighbor. That was probably in 1952 or 53. And then I let that go because we couldn't do it no more. You were plowing, you know, we worked all your ground about 3 times before you did anything, before you planted anything. And I couldn't do it with the help I had, so that's what I did. But then when Mark was graduating from high school and the neighbor's farm come for sale, he came over one night and wanted us to buy it. Well, I had no intention of buying a farm. I was 60 years old, and I told Mark, if you want to buy it, we could buy it without any money down. And I told him I'll furnish the cattle and machinery, and we'll just take over from there and see what happens. It was a very good move, anyway. Mark was only 18 years old when he bought it, and had a few wild hair in him yet.
And what year was that again?
1978.
So that's 71 to 81 to say 91. There's a whole lot of stuff that's happening in that era too. I mean, you talk about the tractor. I mean, that's a major evolution, and it was. But the farms in 71 to 81, we know they expanded. We know operations got bigger. And in 81 to 85, we found out those that got too big, some of them had a problem. Was it a different era of farming prior to 71 than after 71?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. The spray, putting insecticides and herbicides on was a big challenge. We treated it like there was nothing wrong with it. I can remember spraying things with the gloves on, you know, I got my hands off of atrazine and you might, whatever you can spray that time, and you didn't do word, you didn't take any precautions at all. But that was one of the big things, is just, you know, spraying for weeds. You didn't have to cultivate corn and stuff like that. So that was a big change.
Are the days getting shorter, Mark? Do you work 9 to 9 or 6 a.m. to 9 like your dad did?
No, the days are shorter. When we're busy, we put the hours in, planting and harvesting. But we got rid of the dairy in 1996. And in 1996 also, I guess, we built two hog contract finishing barns. And we ran them for 20 years. We don't have them anymore. We freed up a lot of time getting rid of the livestock. So when we do get, like, we finished up spraying the second pass on corn yesterday, we'll have about a week or 10-day break here, and we'll have to spray the beans again. But it's a lot more free time now than there ever used to be.
Well, it gives Bobby a chance to take photos and things like that. Is that what's your primary job, Bobby? How do you fit in all of this?
Well, I guess on the farm, mainly haul grain, and I run one of the combines and one of the planters. But I have some time off in the summer to go and do that kind of stuff. But the ones that you saw on the link, they were actually taken by my cousin. He's the third Robert of the family, and he's a professional photographer. So I can't take the credit for those ones.
They're beautiful images. Does he come out and take a lot of pictures of the farm, or was that just for a special occasion?
No, that he doesn't come out much for any of that kind of stuff. But when Grandpa said he wanted to run the tractor, I wanted him to come down and get some pictures.
So, Robert, when's the last time you planted on a regular basis? When they depended on you and not just, I'm filling in for a day or something.
Last time I planted corn was in 1984 when my mother died. She died when we were ready to plant corn, and Mark took over and he planted ever since.
What were you planting with in 84? Tractor and planter?
Was it a 24 row?
No, I had a two row planter with horses when I. Well, let's see, not 1984. That was the first years we were married. Probably had a four-row planter in 1984.
30-20 and a four-row at that time.
Yeah.
A 30-20 and a four-row. And you said you had horses when you started and a two-row.
They started farming. I planted corn with horses, right.
So you go from horses to a four-row in a short amount of time. Relatively speaking, 30 years, it does blink. What are they... Bobby, what are you running? Mark, what are you running on a regular basis? What's the planter side?
So I run a 16 row with dry fertilizer, 16 row 30 inch. And then we have a hired man that runs a 16 row with 30 inch. And Bobby runs a 24 row 30 inch.
So not just one, not just two, but three at one time. So then, Robert, when you see this machine with the, what made you want to hop back in and see this GPS up front? Why'd you want to do that?
I just wanted to do it. I went from planting corn. I don't know if you remember the corn planters that you put two or three kernels in the ground by hand. I did plant some corn with that, not acres, but, you know, if the horse stepped on a hill of corn, that's what you do. You replant it with that. So I went from that to the 24 row for 5 minutes with the 24 row. But I planted more corn in that 5 minutes than I haven't spent 10 acres with horses.
isn't it something to think of? I mean, you talk about 100 acres, like when you started, to now. I mean, you do have to, you got a lot of ground to cover.
Yep. About 5,000 acres, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, we planted about 5,800 this spring.
Okay. So 5,800. So then, Bobby, how'd the idea come out? Whose idea was it to get him into the planter?
Oh, that was his idea. He got that in his head one day when we were up here, so we wanted to get him in there. Any chance, if he's willing to get in the cab, we'll get him in there.
Do you normally climb in at least a little bit in the spring to ride at least?
That's the first time I was in the tractor this spring. It's hard for me to get in and out.
He's 92 now, and his knees are bad, and it's hard to climb up. But
we made it.
You made it. I was just going to say, what is it, the knees or the hips?
The knees are chopped.
Yeah. Well, you get help to get up into the combine or into the. Why? I don't know why I keep saying combine. I do know the difference. The planter and the tractor there. Describe. When you're sitting there with GPS and you hit the button to go, I mean, it blows my mind, and I'm not 92. It's got to be mind blowing for you.
It's very. I don't know how to describe it, but it's unbelievable, really. I sat in there and we went, I don't know how many yards or how many acres, but never touched the steering wheel, and it stayed right in the center of the field. You know, it was just it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. And really, I enjoyed it very much.
But I'm sure that machine doesn't plan as straight as you did.
No. That's as crooked as hell.
So you weren't the guy in the neighborhood where I said, oh, look at that, Robert, his rows are straight as an arrow. They didn't say that about you?
No, they didn't say that about me, no.
But we weren't the guy that also had the really bad rows. There was always one guy that's known to have the bad rows. He didn't care so much.
I think that's me now. I drive him. When I do, it's not very straight.
Well, let's grade his performance. How's the stand on what you planted there, Robert? Does it look good?
No, it looks very good. The crop looks very good right now. Almost every day I drive around and just see how they're doing. I can see they're getting better every day. I get sick of sitting in the house and doing nothing, so I jump in the car and drive around, see what the boys are doing or see if they're behaving.
Or the gator. He likes driving around on the gator.
Oh, yeah.
That works, too.
Yeah.
When you do drive around and you do see, are you in need of a rain right now? Are you getting enough moisture?
And we had about almost 2 inches last week. It's about right now.
I would say the moisture is perfect.
Yeah. There's more rain predicted for later this week, I'm sure, in your area, too.
Yeah, the forecast does kind of change. I mean, we go from a 10-day hot and dry period to rain, and it's going to be kind of hard to see. I haven't looked at what the market did this morning, but I know overnight it wasn't good, so we're going to probably see some of that pressure. Robert, do you miss at all worrying about what the price is doing when someone says it's up or down?
Yes, it does. It bothers me. I know the investment the boys have, and it could get to be quite a challenge before the year is over, I'm afraid. But I hope it works out.
Well, give me a little perspective. I mean, the stress is one thing. I mean, yeah, you're not in that seat necessarily pulling the trigger, but you do feel and you've got that instinct of, well, we should be selling, we should be holding. Is this the most tumultuous time that we've had, or is this just like another year or every other year?
I think it's a little bit worse than average, I think, but it's something that's continual, you know, year after year, it's a challenge. I had a brother-in-law that had a friend that lived in South Dakota. And he went to Florida for the winter, and he had two boys farming in South Dakota. And the boys called him and said, the corn is $8 a bushel. Should we sell? You bet, he said, you should sell. But they didn't. So they ended up selling it for $6. He says, that's what you call experience.
And you also call that, as our old analyst Walt Hackney used to say, how much damn money do you want to make? You know, that's just greed that's coming out there right now. But it is hard. You are married to that bushel. You know what the work was. As you said, you know, when you'd work those 12 to 15, 16-hour days, you knew it was worth so much more because of that sweat equity. And that feeling I can't imagine has left either.
Well, I think they do a better job of bookwork today. They know what the inputs are. They know what it's going to cost them, and they've got to get so much money for the corn to break even. And I really think they're doing a good job.
He still worries about it all the time. Oh, yeah. He hasn't lost that.
But does he ever say anything to you, Mark, where he says, I don't know, if that goes another penny or nickel higher, I might be selling. Does he ever tell you that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of – it's more you should have. You know? Yeah. Well, I can tell it then.
Yeah. Thanks, yeah. Captain Obvious. Yeah.
Exactly.
But I started farming with my dad in 1951, and I bought the farm in 63. I never had an argument with him of any kind. I sold the farm to the boys. I've never had an argument with them. It's just been a perfect transfer, whatever you want to call it.
Was the transfer to you a good one back in 51 and 63? And why was it a good one?
Why was it a good one?
Yeah.
My dad lived in Madison, and he came out one day and he said, I'll sell you the farm. And just like that, I bought it.
Very matter-of-factly, huh?
Yeah. And I paid $30,000 for 100 acres and half the cattle and half the machinery. Cattle and machine. Yeah.
And I always, you know, when families will say this, I do kind of start asking a little bit, because I think there's some families that won't have that conversation of the transfer of generations. And I always think if we can highlight a family that has had those frank, real discussions, because when you've got both Sean and Mark who wanted to farm, they're equal in the eyes of the law, you know, when it comes to the land, it seems. And so, Mark, I don't know. I mean, did you feel that your dad was fair when it was, and you guys talked about things back then in that transition?
Yeah. When that neighbor's farm came for sale in 1978, and like Dad said, there was no money down on it, which is exactly what I had. I was able to come up with nothing. And like Dad said too, I just became an equal partner. I owned one farm. He owned one farm, all the cattle, machinery, and seed. And he said, we'll go like this for 4 years. And then when your brother Sean gets out of school, and he was helping all along anyway on the farm before school, he said that Sean gets half of your farm, half of what you have, whether it's worth 10 or 20% more or 10 or 20% less. And if Sean doesn't want a farm and he goes away, well, then you and I will settle up and make up for the machinery and cattle and that I didn't own half of. And in 1981, Sean graduated and he wanted a farm. So he just became an equal partner with me on January 1st of 1982. And that way, Dad kind of helped us both out, starting out in 78, helping just me, but then it transferred to helping Sean also. And it was a really good break for me, because most kids get out of school and their dad sells them half the cattle and half the machinery, and Dad keeps the land. You know, land goes up in value, cattle die, machinery breaks and depreciates. Well, I had an asset that was going up in value, and it's helped me all along, I feel.
So now how you make, Bobby, have you, how you entering into these conversations? I know you're doing some labor and things like that. What's your timetable on things?
Yeah, right now I'm just working full time on the farm, and we're talking about me buying in, and right now is not the best time the way everything's looking, but hopefully within the next couple of years, I'll be buying in and start taking over.
When you hear $30,000 for 100 acres, you go, man, that's a good price.
I would do that.
Robert, what do you remember about your parents and grandparents? And I don't know if you have a recollection of great-grandparents, but what it was like to be the in a line or in a lineage of generations on the farm.
Well, my grandfather, if I got this record right, they homesteaded the 100 acres that I lived on. And then they were supposed to make it tillable soil or make a living doing it. And then they did. And my dad was born in 1901 on that farm. And he bought the farm in 1942 or 43. I'm not sure the year it was. And from then on, I worked for him. And I was, Bobby won't believe this, but I worked until I was 21. I had to ask Dad for money if I went out at night because I didn't get a wage. So when I was 21 years old, I got $100 a month and I worked 7 days a week, which is hard to believe, but I did it. And everybody did it.
So. Yeah.
Well, yeah, that was the time. That was absolutely the time.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the way it is today. It just seems unreasonable that what some people... Well, they'll send me the one a key to get parts, and I can carry $600 worth of parts off the car by myself. So it's just a screwy world, I think.
Green parts. Oh. You only get green parts.
Yeah.
Well, so Bobby, do you ask Grandpa a lot of questions? Or, I mean, is it just always when you reflect upon something like this? I mean, let's face it, milestones are... when you don't know what they are at that exact moment, but I got to tell you, that to me seems like a milestone you had this spring.
This one I knew right away just because, I mean, seeing his face when he got back in the tractor and everything, he was just so happy. And like when I called my cousin Rob about taking the pictures, that's one that like he thought it was really cool and it was a really cool opportunity. So this time everyone definitely knew that it was a milestone and we'd look back and enjoy it.
Robert, what do you think are milestones? Do you think that was a milestone this spring?
Excuse me, I don't know.
Well, do you think that's a significant moment in family history that you hopping up there to get a ride for the first time in a while?
I think it is, yes. I do. I never dreamt I'd be able to do it, but I did it, and I'm glad I did. And thanks to Bobby to get me in there. Well, he just grabbed a hold of me and I was going in. There's no question.
Do you walk? I saw like a stick of some kind. Is that a cane or just an assistance or was that just something that happened to be there to help you up?
I think that was that hand corn planter, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, that's what that was.
Yeah. Yeah. He wanted to plant a seed with a one seed at a time, single planter, and then go plant 24 rows at a time.
Okay. See, that's why I got to ask these questions. Sometimes I looked at that. Yeah. And now that you say that, I had not seen that. That was one thing. We don't have any photos of any of the old equipment we had growing up. So
I do use a cane and walker most of the time though. But
yeah. I'd like to add one thing, Paul. So kind of on a little bit of a side note, my older brother got cancer early this late winter, February, and he passed away real quick. It didn't last long, and then that was his son that was taking the picture. And I think this was a little bit therapeutic for my dad and for us and for his son to be out there kind of doing some of that. It was a little bit in memory of my brother Kevin also.
What did Kevin do? Tell me about Kevin.
He was the smart one. He got off the farm as fast as he could. he bought an apartment. He had quite a few apartments in the Madison and Brown area. We actually own a couple with him still. But he was in apartment maintenance and then maintenance at St. Mary's Hospital in Madison for about 35 years.
Did you get him out to ever help on weekends or nights or anything when he had an itch, or did he just stay away?
No, he never had that itch. I think if he'd have got retired and had more free time, I think he'd have drove some trucks for us in the fall. But he was a motorcycle rider and liked going on trips. But his apartments kept him busy most weekends.
So then his son getting a chance to take photos and document it. And I got to tell you guys, and I I get a little struggle. I struggle sometimes when we start talking about this stuff. It is emotional. You just don't know when things are going to change. Someone's going to get a diagnosis. That phone is going to ring. And so I'm super glad that you took those photos and you guys can sit there and be three wide and have this conversation. And I'm so glad that you allowed me to do it.
We appreciate it.
So, yes, I enjoy your Sunday morning program.
Well, we hope we can keep doing it and keep telling stories like this. I appreciate it. Mark, Robert, and Bobby, you guys, thank you so very much for the time this morning.
Okay, thank you.
My thanks to the Farrell family of Mount Horeb, Wisconsin, which is just outside of Madison. Beautiful country if you ever get a chance to make that drive, and I know many of you have. So that will do it for this edition. Please share this, like it, tell your friend. I don't care. As long as you share it with someone, that'd be great. This is the M2M Podcast, a production of Iowa PBS. Thank you for watching.